My name's Chuck, and I've been practicing here for about 10 years, and my wife and I are deeply steeped in so many pieces of the practice. It's remarkable. And we're really grateful, and I wanted to acknowledge Kokyo's perseverance at wanting me to talk and me declining repeatedly. Give you kind of a sense of myself. I'm a retired teacher, and I've only been in this teaching seat a couple of times. Probably the more significant one was as the head student in 2012. I was Shuso, and I learned a lot. And it was very humbling and a very wonderful experience to deepen my practice and to engage more and more in community and the teachings. I wanted to acknowledge there's a picture on the altar of our teacher, Catherine Thanis, and this morning we did a memorial service for her. And it was wonderful, and Patrick said some really nice words. And it brought back so many memories that part of what I'm going to say this evening is directly related to some of my experiences with Catherine. I have deep gratitude for her as a teacher. I felt like I didn't know her very long, and yet there was an intimacy that was quite remarkable. I wanted to tell a few stories about my relationship with Catherine. One, so that some of you who never knew her would get a little bit of sense of her, and maybe you get a better sense of me. But it's part of the overall what makes this place this place, what makes this person this person. And I'm going to read a poem that Nanette wrote about Catherine at her memorial at Tassajara, which is just captures it perfectly. As I said, I was a teacher for over 30 years, and I had a little side job of teaching driving also. And Catherine came to me when she was 80 years old and said, "I need to pass my driver's test one more time." So we went out together, and I reviewed a lot of things with her, and it was a really nice experience. I have to relate that I had the honor of driving Catherine to our sister temple in Monterey for about 8 months. Every month she'd have a meeting there, and I volunteered to drive her, and it was a pleasure, and the sangha and Monterey would always thank me up and down and say, "Oh, it's so wonderful that you take this time and drive the abbot to the Zen Center for these meetings and talks." And every time I found it really almost odd, because it was such a pleasure riding with her, driving with her. And I just remembered I didn't put my hearing aids in. This is the crux of the story. So Catherine and I would talk and talk and talk, and sometimes she would actually sleep in the car. She said she was so comfortable with my driving that she felt really comfortable that she could actually sleep, and I thought that was great, and she would be exhausted sometimes. But she used to always have to tell me, "Chuck, speak more quietly." I would get excited about any given topic, and the volume would rise. And here we are in this little car together. And so I'm an excitable person. And so she had to tell me dozens of times, not just once or twice. And I would always acknowledge it and do better to become more mindful of my speech and quiet down just a little bit. And then I'd get excited again and the volume would go up. So the crux of the story is when Catherine passed away in 2012, unbeknownst to myself and Jeffrey Sherman, who has a hearing deficit quite similar to my own, we went to the audiologist together after we both inherited a set of hearing aids from Catherine. And I really meant to put them in before I came over here. And didn't. So every time I put the Abbott's ears in my ears, I think of her. And it makes my gratitude grow. Every time. And this is part of our practice. And I'm hoping to weave in some Buddhism 101 and talk a little bit about the Eightfold Path. Eightfold Noble Truths. And how my experiences here and my experiences in the world have brought me to looking at these attitudes and behaviors, that they would become my attitude and my behaviors. I got a long way to go. But the Abbot's generosity and the Sangha here, which is quite a marvelous group of people, helps us and allows us to look at these behaviors and look at these attitudes that we have and to keep checking ourselves and to keep redirecting so that we're closer and closer to how we want to be in the world, to be a more exemplary person or attitude, if you will, than just going along willy-nilly and not really paying much attention. So I'm going to reference a lot of people that are in the room with the various things that that I've been able to be involved with because of Zen Center. And it all started with Catherine. Catherine encouraging me to go cook with Patrick. So how many years has it been, Patrick? 8? 9 years. Okay, I think I've only been on board 8 years. But we cook every Friday for the homeless garden and the River Street shelter. Every Friday, unless there's a session. In which case, we always let them know ahead of time that we won't be cooking for that particular Friday. But it's a constant, ongoing, wonderful thing. And I could say, ask Kathy, ask Patrick, ask Peter. There are several people in this room that have participated, and this is a way that we can embody our practice through generosity, through a little more selflessness than we usually maintain. So these opportunities have arisen because of Zen Center, and I just have great gratitude for the time right now for me. I'll be 70 on my next birthday, and I'm so grateful that I'm able to do what I'm able to do still. And this whole question around age keeps coming up for me repeatedly, again and again and again. My wife and I take care of 3 grandchildren here in Santa Cruz. She was with a 4-month-old today, and I was with a 2-year-old today, all day. I'm exhausted. I can't even believe I walked over here from next door. And then Nanette will take care of the three-year-old tomorrow. And so I keep looking at our aging process. I keep looking at the things that we do, that we wish to do, and realize constantly, continually, again and again, realize that everything is impermanent. These little ones are going to have maybe a memory of me. And I often wonder, will I be around when they're teenagers even? But this whole thing of impermanence comes up again and again. And without turning away from that aging process and denying it or pushing it aside, I find that mostly because of practice, it's always staring me in the face, and I'm always in a situation of making decisions about how you hold it. No different than how you hold your life and the things that you choose to do in your life. And this is the very thing about Zen Center, is it's provided things in my life that are beneficial to other people. And so I'm able to engage use generosity, use a term that I've used, I think, ever since I started coming to Zen Center, just doing the next thing, taking the next step, again and again and again, moving forward, and not thinking a whole lot about it. It's actually funny to sit and talk about it, because it's really much more about the action. It's not about talking about it, it's about the action. In addition to cooking for the homeless garden and the River Street shelter, which has been a joy because it turned my thinking. I have always thought I was a pretty open person, but boy, when I went there and went serving, I had all these judgments about what is homelessness, you know. And I think I'm not a lot different than most people with regard to putting them in a box and saying, oh, these are people that have hit hard times. These are people that are alcoholic. These are people that are drug addicts. This is really unfortunate. And then as soon as I started meeting people, and, oh, yeah, I lost my home because I lost my job. And then I still have a car, so I can live in my car. And so I started hearing stories and I started engaging with people one-on-one and learning that my ideas were completely wrong. My ideas were the judgments, actually, that come up, and quite naturally so. And so that shift of understanding was exactly what I needed to commit myself to doing it more and more, to doing it for 8 years. I have to be candid and be honest that every time you try to benefit somebody else, it comes right back at you. The gratitude that people share at the garden, oh, we're so glad you've come. We love the food you cook. Remember when they didn't care for vegan soups? So, you know, we do our best to make the best meal we can in about 4 hours. And we do a really good job because our heart goes into it, our effort goes into it, our love goes into it. And I'm so grateful to Patrick for being the spearhead of this particular project. Later on, I was able to be scooped up by another Buddhist program that's down the street a ways, a Vipassana group, and an ex-administrator that I've worked with when I was teaching high school. It was a continuation high school, so there were kids that had gotten kicked out of other schools and were having a hard time completing school, and that was the goal, to complete school. So this administrator was very active in another sangha and invited me to come to the jail and do meditation with two cell blocks right down the street at the jail. And so I picked that one up about 3 years ago. And that's also an every Friday event. And so far I've met six of my former students there, as old as 37, I believe. And so, again, I was able to watch my judgments come up and let them go and realize that I'm just there as a facilitator. And I'm just there to show them that somebody cares and that somebody wants to share some good teaching and a moment of quality time. And just like at the garden, the inmates, whether they have known you before or not, they have great appreciation. And so there again, you're giving a little bit of your time, you're giving a little bit of your thoughts and your support, and you're receiving right back from them this great gratitude. And I'm so happy that Kathy has found a niche at the jail that goes well beyond what we're doing in guided meditations and sitting and giving Buddhist teachings to inmates. She's actually on a whole nother level of counseling and working with a consistent group of women and men. And it's so wonderful to hear her finding that niche and fulfilling part of who she is. And part of what this practice is in benefiting others, in working to be there just moment by moment. And isn't it fresh every single time? You don't not want to go because it's not interesting, but it's heavy sometimes, and it's challenging sometimes, but it's also so wonderful. Fairly recently, Stan and I were able to work at a high school, the same high school where I had retired, in teaching mindfulness it started out a gigantic group that was way too big, but it was also a really, really good experience. And I look at all these experiences and, you know, I think of myself as having been a high school teacher, period. And yet the practice, in addition to so many other things, has made me become acutely aware the moment-to-moment interactions with the prisoners, with the Sangha, with the mindfulness group, with the people at the garden, a little less so with the people at the shelter because our interaction there is so minimal. But this opportunity to step forward and to engage in the activities that you feel may benefit somebody has been really, really meaningful for me. I mentioned part of the driving scenarios with Catherine. And I can't help but think, in her passing, we were in a sesshin. We were sitting, I don't remember if it was a 5 or 7 day sesshin, we were sitting when Catherine was essentially comatose. And she didn't live very far from here, and we walked to her house. Instead of sitting meditation here in the Zendo, we all walked silently to her house, and we sat around her body, and we listened to her breathe. And that was a teaching. It was her last teaching, just breathing. And she was a teacher about the body. And so it seemed so appropriate that we would just sit and it would be so quiet. And you could just discern her breathing. After she passed, we had a memorial at Tassajara where we spread her ashes. Is that a year later? And here again, there was another profound experience. I'll share my experience real briefly, and then I'll share Nanette's experience, which is which just about blows me out of the water. My experience was, I was by Tassajara Creek, and each of the practitioners held in their hand Catherine's ashes. And so here I was holding my teacher in my hand, and the aggregate of bone and ash was so palpable to me. And it was so moving to me to see the air lift the ashes and go into the air and see the other ashes fall into this crystal clear water from the Tassajara Springs and Creek. And this feeling of letting this teacher go and holding this teacher at the same time. It was a really, really profound experience for me that maybe can't be expressed in words. I would like to read this poem that Nanette wrote. She went to a different site. There were two different groups of people in procession carrying Catherine's ashes. And one of the sites was up by Suzuki Roshi's memorial site at the top of a hill on a very, very narrow switchback path that opens up into a beautiful little area with a few trees and some magnificent, gigantic rocks. So Nanette wrote a poem right after this experience, and it's simply entitled Catherine. When I flicked the scoop of ashes from the worn wooden spoon, they drifted, then sifted down, and the sage below us burst into flame, full of vibrant life that couldn't be contained. We were scooping the ashes from a plastic bag, passing it hand to hand down the slope with awe and bewilderment. At the end of the line, Charlie shook out the bag. The empty plastic bag waved in the wind like a weary flag. There was an odd, unexpected misty rain that day. This was the body of my teacher. You hardly noticed the rain, really, but by the time we wound our way down from the memorial site, water was beating in my hair, and on my rakasu hung damp, soaked through, weighty with her teachings. And that really describes it. And I so appreciated that, because she could put into words that feeling, that presence that to me is so hard to capture. It's just so difficult for there to be words. I've always really envied people that write well. who are poetic. And this probably more than almost any had expressed something that was so dear to all of us, and done so poetically and so clearly. So I appreciate that so much. I wanted to read just a little bit about the Eightfold Path. So for some of you new faces, maybe this is Buddhism 101. And for everyone else, they will bear with me. And Jean actually taught about this and articulated it really beautifully not very long ago. And when I come to that section that was most profound for me in Jean's teaching, I want to mark that. So please bear with me just a minute. According to Buddhist thought, just as there are various defilements of the mind, principally greed, hate, and delusion, so there are various wholesome qualities of the mind as well as greed, hate, and delusion. There are then their opposites, namely non-attachment, loving-kindness, and wisdom. Were it not for these, there would be no way of breaking out of the cycle of greed, hatred, and delusion, and thus no path leading to the cessation of dukkha or suffering. The principle, if not only aim, of the Buddhist path is to develop and cultivate these and related wholesome qualities. In the earliest Buddhist text, the noble truth of the path to the cessation of suffering is most frequently summed up as the Noble Eightfold Path: perfect, right, or appropriate, view, intention, speech, conduct, livelihood, effort, mindfulness, and concentration. The basic meaning of these eight items is clearly explained in a number of places in the earliest Buddhist texts. And then they refer to this table, and this table was actually used by Jean in a very skillful way. And I'll go through it fairly quickly, with emphasis in the one area that always stumped me, which was right effort. Right view, seeing the Four Noble Truths. Right intention, desirelessness, friendliness, compassion. Right speech, reframing from false speech, reframing from divisive speech, reframing from hurtful speech, and reframing from idle chatter. That's my worst one, sorry. Right action, reframing from harming living beings, reframing from taking what is not given, reframing from sexual misconduct. Right livelihood, we always think of that as being making an honest living. And here it emphasizes not based on wrong speech and action. Right effort. And this is the one that Jean not only diagrammed beautifully, but it expressed it really beautifully when he was teaching. To prevent unarisen, unwholesome states. To abandon unarisen, unwholesome states. To arouse unarisen wholesome states, to develop arisen wholesome states. Right mindfulness, contemplation of body, contemplation of feeling, contemplation of mind, contemplation of Dharma, or the teachings of the Buddha. Right concentration, Right practice of the four dhyanas. So the basic meaning of these eight items, we start seeing. And for me, the reason I started with the opportunities that have arisen at Zen Center for me is the way I embody these. These teachings become my life to the best of my ability, based on my ability to pay attention to what I'm doing, what I'm saying, how I'm acting. And so I'm a really lucky person because I have a lot of time. I'm retired. As expressed, we take care of some grandchildren. We do various things like unlock the Zendo at 5:15 in the morning. Come to Dharma talks on Wednesday night. Sometimes attend teaching schedules. So, as I was reviewing for myself and thinking about how I am in the world, and thinking, is this an important thing for all of us to look at, how we are in the world? Is it something we look at very much? Is it something we think about at all? And so practice for me has pushed me in this direction of thinking about it more and more. And I don't embody these practices real well. But I'm certainly becoming more and more aware of what I do and what I don't do. And so, in part, a lot of what I keep looking at am I doing harm? Am I exercising generosity? Where do I catch myself? Where do I see clearly? And where am I really deluded? But the interpretation of the overall structure of the Eightfold Path is perhaps not so straightforward. We all have certain views, ideas, beliefs, and opinions about ourselves and others and the world. And I tried to illustrate that by my misconception and my judging as I go into various venues. The judgments come up. I try to notice them and I try to drop them and be a little more open to whatever it is that we're facing. That's what's right in front of my face. Without judgments, without holding on to preconceived ideas, letting it go. Depending on these, we turn toward the world with various intentions and aspirations. Depending on these, we speak, act, and generally make our way in the world. So far, so good. But the meaning of the last three items on the Eightfold Path are not so transparent. Effort, mindfulness, and concentration are in effect technical terms of Buddhist meditation practice whose expression in everyday language is less obvious. In practice, they relate to one's underlying state of mind, or perhaps better, emotional state. In other words, the list of eight items suggests that there are a basic relationship between one's understanding, one's actions, and one's underlying emotional state. The eight items of the path are not, however, to be understood simply as stages, each one being completed before moving on to the next. In fact, when we look at the extensive treatment of the Eightfold Path in Buddhist literature, it becomes apparent that view, intention, speech, conduct, livelihood, effort, mindfulness, and concentration are presented here as eight significant dimensions of one's behavior, mental, spoken, and bodily, that are regarded as operating in dependence on one another and as defining a complete way of living. So after coming to the Zen Center, it's kind of a shift in the way of living. How we meet each moment. Sitting in meditation on a daily basis gives you a lot of opportunity to think and not to think. So, as I experience this aging body, this is the first time I've sat cross-legged in months. Nanette and I did a 3-week intensive at Green Gulch Farm in January, and I injured my knee, and I've been sitting on a chair every morning now for about 5 months. And so I'm becoming acutely aware of this impermanent body of mine and of this aging body of mine. And I'm trying really hard not to grasp at what faculty remains. You know? When you've got that 2-year-old granddaughter running you around in circles all day, it's the most wonderful exhaustion you can have. But it's exhausting. And so I continually reflect on what is this practice going to look like in 10 years for me? Well, I see these grandkids when they're teenagers. Well, I get to watch them graduate high school and go on. And so, even though it's a reoccurring theme for me, there's another reoccurring theme of just letting it go and just stepping forward and doing the next thing. Whether that's teaching pottery classes at the continuation high school, or if it's befriending somebody, or if it's doing the farmer's market, or going to the jail, or being in a good relationship, or supporting your kids and their kids. I'm trying really hard to not allow the reoccurring theme to dissuade me from doing the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing, and meeting each moment to the best of my ability in an upright manner. And just living life that way, without expectation. We're so fortunate. I think we don't frequently think of how privileged we are. But being able to look at the spectrum of people that I've been able to be exposed to has been really beneficial and helpful for me to realize how easy life is for us in so many ways. We're almost at time, and I would be happy to entertain any questions that anybody might have. Patrick. Tomato Dharma. Well, besides being a teacher, I've been a part-time farmer. Nanette and I have lived on a collectively owned organic farm for over 30 years. And that's another part of the letting go. Is, oh, this lifestyle fits better for a younger body. But I think that the interaction with community, not a lot different than Sangha, you know, always with our best intention, always with a great deal of patience, trying to understand and embrace others as if they were yourself. That was a good practice for us to be in a collective, to be in a group of people with a shared idea about organic farming, but also a community. And then what that also provided was, you know, for years I did farmers markets in the heart of the city in San Francisco and in Palo Alto, and now I'm at Cabrillo College, and that won't start till probably September for me. But it is not dissimilar in that you bring yourself forward and you meet your public. And, you know, we've had customers that have been with us for 30 years. And we've been certified organic for 30 years. And so we have people way older than me that keep coming back. And they scold you when you first show up because the Cabrillo market's the last one we do. So they scold me and they say, "What took you so long?" I'll say, "Well, you know, the farm always starts the Palo Alto market first, and then right after that, then they start the downtown market, and then last of all, we do the Cabrillo market." And so there's all these great old customers, and it's this heart connection. It's no different than how you bring yourself forward right here. And I remember when I was Shuso, I think Kokyo, Patrick, and Jean all had to remind me, "Oh, you're not doing this like somebody else. I followed my wife, and it was a difficult act to follow." And so I made several comments to that effect. And everybody had to remind me that I have my Dharma position. It's who I am, right? And so I've had to be slapped in the face with that again and again and reminded when that comparative mind comes up and you say, "Oh, I don't do it as good as they do." You bring yourself back to, you know, you do your best and that's what you do. And that is your position. That's the position you hold and you take. And it's not really dissimilar to how we bring ourselves forward in the bigger community out there. And I really see that with the farmers market because the people are so sweet. People are so grateful. People are so kind in general. And this is the last year I'm going to do that. And, you know, it's another stepping away. It's another giving up. It's another letting go that is not easy to do. And yet, clearly, it's time. I hate loading that truck. Go ahead and heft 60 or 70 boxes of tomatoes. See how you feel. So, the connection is still the connection, and it's like you always say, it's the interconnectedness of all beings, all things, you know. And it's so funny that this occurs this late in my life, realizing some of these things. Thank you, Patrick. Yeah, I almost hate to use the term, but it comes up again and again and again and again, and appropriately so. Oh, you have another practice opportunity. You see your judgments come up, and you both worry, and you have judgments about choices that people make, and then you have that practice opportunity of letting it go and going, oh, this is not mine to hold. You know, this is something to observe, and try not to judge, and just let it go. And it's a very, very difficult practice, but it's a very good practice. Nanette and I have this this ongoing verbiage of, oh, just an observation. No judgments. Right.
Who says that more?
That's a good question, Stan. I probably say it more because I'm always weaseling out of something I've said, you know, the idle chatter. Well, thank you so much for coming, all of you. I want to say especially all the new faces. Almost always before a Dharma talk, people will, in the teaching seat, will ask, is there anybody here for the first time? And it's not always so that just because I haven't seen you before that you haven't been here, because you may have been. Because I always sit in the morning and not very often in the afternoon or noontime. But all of you are so welcome. I hope that something I said was of benefit. And I'm actually really grateful and I'm almost surprised that you didn't tell me that it was the Memorial Day that you were slating me for. Because once I realized that, everything changed.